Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, January 9th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Storm Expected to Dump Months' Worth of Rain on Central Illinois, by Lenore Sapota. Bloomington. Check your sump pump and be alert if you live near a stream, river, or flood-prone area. Forecasters are expecting a strong storm system to dump a month's worth of precipitation on central Illinois in a matter of days, starting Thursday. A flood watch has been issued from McLean County from Friday afternoon through Saturday morning. Other counties in the flood watch include DeWitt, Logan, Macon, Piatt, Tazewell, and Woodford. But don't put away your snow shovel. Accumulating snow is expected to follow the rain. Chris Miller, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service office in Lincoln, said all of central Illinois, including Bloomington Normal and Decatur, is expected to get 2 to 3 inches of rain from Thursday through Saturday. That's more than we average for the entire month of January, Miller said on Wednesday. I would not be surprised if the area from McLean County eastward gets 3 to over 4 inches. The exact storm path is still uncertain, and as we see this develop, the heavy rainfall axis is creeping farther north, he said. As of Wednesday afternoon, the center of the large storm system was expected to move just north of the Ohio Valley, with possible severe weather in southern Illinois. The main message we want to get out is the heavy rainfall. We don't want people to get caught off guard, said Miller, adding that flooding could occur along waterways and in low-lying areas. A ton of moisture is coming up from the Gulf of Mexico. After the main part of the storm passes through on Saturday, cold air will move in, resulting in a brief period of mixed precipitation and sleet before changing to all snow, said Miller. Temperatures in the mid-50s on Friday and wet ground from the rain will lessen the chance for a lot of snow accumulation because of the warm ground, he said. Bloomington Normal could get a couple of inches of snow, he said. The switch to snow will occur later in areas farther south. Decatur is likely to get about an inch of snow, he said. This is an active weather pattern we're going to have to keep an eye on, said Miller. Miller said the system will be accompanied by strong winds with gusts of 35 to 40 miles per hour possible. We could get another shot of rain on Tuesday, he added. The next story is entitled, Man Arrested on Murder Charge After New Year's Eve Shooting, by Paul Sweech. Normal. A Bloomington man has been arrested in connection with the New Year's Eve shooting death of Tariq L. Houston. Juwan I.C. Griffin, 19, was arrested late Wednesday afternoon on first-degree murder charges related to the death of Houston, Normal Police announced late Wednesday night. Normal Police made the arrest in collaboration with the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force at a residence in the 400 block of West Chestnut Street in Bloomington. Griffin is being held in the McLean County Jail in lieu of bond on a first-degree murder charge, Normal Police said. The McLean County State's Attorney's Office is reviewing the case to determine if additional charges are appropriate. Houston, 17, of Springfield and recently of Decatur, was shot in the abdomen and died of the wound, McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder has said. Police found Houston in a parking lot outside Heartland Village Apartments in the 1700 block of Putnam Avenue in Northwest Normal after someone called 911 at 11:40 a.m. on New Year's Eve. Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner said that Houston attended a party, a disagreement between two groups escalated, shots were fired, and Houston was struck. Last Friday, Garrett R. Allfield, 18, of Bloomington, was arrested for allegedly firing shots near Houston after Houston was fatally wounded, but those shots didn't hurt anyone and did not result in Houston's death. The next local news story is entitled State to Return Papers to Butler by Kelsey Watznauer. Bloomington. State prosecutors have agreed to return almost 500,000 business documents taken in an Illinois State Police investigation into the president of Central Illinois Arena Management and the city-owned arena. State police seized more than 60 boxes of business documents during their investigation of John Y. Butler, but some of those did not fall within the parameters of a warrant. At a December hearing, defense attorney Stephen Beckett asked that those documents, which cannot be used as evidence, be returned to Butler. Butler faces more than 40 criminal charges, including fraud and theft of government money, related to his operation of what then was U.S. Cellular Coliseum. The downtown venue, now under different management, is Grossinger Motors Arena. During a brief court hearing Wednesday, Assistant State's Attorney David Rossi said the state agreed to return the documents, but said prosecutors and the defense are very far apart when it comes to the anticipated amount of time it will take to return them. "We are talking about approximately 500,000 documents," he said. Beckett intends to identify and differentiate which of the documents can be used as evidence in the April trial, so that coming into this process, everybody knows what's in and what's out, he said. Here's an item entitled, Seven Escape Blaze at Bloomington Normal Duplex, by David Prober. Bloomington. Seven people escaped injury Wednesday morning when a fire broke out in the basement of a duplex at 316 Riley Drive. The two-unit brick-and-frame structure was home to seven people. They were alerted to the fire by one of the residents. Heavy smoke damaged the east side of the building. Five Bloomington and one Normal Fire Department unit were on the scene. A fire official said the fire was limited mostly to the basement of the east unit. Heavy smoke came from second-floor bedrooms. The official said the west unit in the duplex had only minor smoke damage, and it appeared that a firewall between the units worked. A cause was not available Wednesday, but a fire investigator was at the scene. The next story is entitled, Man Accused of Allowing Girls Injuries, by Kelsey Watznauer. Bloomington. The father of Rico Roundtree, the 8-year-old girl who died after her father's girlfriend repeatedly beat her and videotaped the abuse, has been charged with endangering the child's life. Richard Roundtree, 31, was in court Wednesday after he was charged on an arrest warrant for circumstances surrounding the death of his minor daughter, according to Normal Police. He is accused of endangering the life or health of a child, a Class 3 felony, for allegedly permitting Rika Roundtree to be exposed to and failed to protect her from ongoing physical child abuse that was occurring within their shared residence, the court documents read. Rika died January 26, 2019, of peritonitis due to intestinal perforation from blunt force trauma. In November, a McLean County jury found Roundtree's girlfriend, Cynthia Baker, guilty of murder, aggravated battery of a child, child endangerment, and three counts of domestic battery. The conduct described in Richard Roundtree's charge was a proximate cause of the girl's death. Roundtree is jailed in lieu of posting $10,035. His defense attorney requested a lower bond, but the judge declined. Last week, a judge postponed sentencing for the girlfriend, Cynthia Baker, while her new attorney works to request a new trial on grounds of ineffective counsel. Here's an article entitled, Plan Looks at Making County Healthier, by Paul Sweech. Bloomington. The path to a healthier McLean County should include a community approach to enhance mental health and substance abuse treatment, improved access to health care, and promoting healthy eating and active living, according to McLean County's 3-year Community Health Improvement Plan. The 85-page plan, which has proposals to address McLean County's top 3 health needs during the next 3 years, was approved Wednesday night by the McLean County Board of Health. McLean County's second countywide 3-year health improvement plan is scheduled to be okayed later this month by boards representing Advocate Broman Medical Center, OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center, and Chestnut Health System. Those entities and the McLean County Health Department have representatives on the steering committee of the McLean County Community Health Council, which approved the plan December 17th. That we have a joint plan is remarkable, Kathy Coverston Anderson, Health Department Assistant Administrator and the department's representative on the steering committee, told the Board of Health. She said a report will be released in June showing how the community responded to the 2017-2019 plan. The 2020 to 2022 plan, being approved this month, is a response to the Community Health Needs Assessment, which was completed in August following data collection and analysis. A survey of county residents and the involvement of 54 individuals representing about 40 organizations in healthcare, human services, schools, local government, police, and major employers. The assessment identified behavioral health, mental health and substance abuse treatment, access to health care, and healthy eating and active living as McLean County's top health needs. Among behavioral health findings were that 28% of survey respondents rated their mental health as good, compared with 72% in 2015. 82% reported mental health as being a major health issue locally. 31% of youths reported feeling sad or hopeless, with 16% seriously considering attempting suicide, and McLean County having more emergency department visits than most Illinois counties because of adolescent suicide, intentional self-injury, and alcohol use. The plan calls for more use of evidence-based programs, such as the Ending the Silence Suicide Awareness Program, Mental Health First Aid, and Too Good for Drugs, the creation of a substance use coalition, and continuing efforts to grow telepsychiatry to assist frequent users of the justice system and emergency departments, and to expand immediate access to behavioral health care, such as through the McLean County Triage Center. Among access to care findings were that 19% of survey respondents reported using the emergency department as their primary medical care, and 19% reported not having access to dental care. The plan calls for linking lower-income residents with a medical home, increasing the capacity of organizations that provide them with dental services, increasing availability of transportation for them to health care, and increasing accessibility to community-based services. Among healthy eating, active living findings were that 86% of county residents don't meet exercise guidelines, 94% don't eat enough fruits and vegetables, and 32% of adults are obese. The plan calls for more education about the availability of fruits and veggies, increased access to healthy foods, and promoting physical activity in the workplace, community, and among children. The next story is entitled Deaths Prompt Fentanyl Warning by Kelsey Watznauer, Bloomington. Police and the McLean County Coroner are reaching out to the community about the dangers of fentanyl after recent overdose deaths. "We've seen an uptick in overdose deaths. We had 2 today," McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder said on Wednesday. "It's just very alarming. We want people to be safe. During an emergency or overdose situation, people should call 911. Local law enforcement and emergency responders often are equipped with Narcan or other opioid overdose reversal drugs. Those with addiction issues or questions also can call 211 for the hotline operated by PATH, providing access to help. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, most recent cases of fentanyl-related harm, overdose, and death in the United States are linked to illegally made fentanyl. When produced and sold in illegal drug markets, the pain reliever is often mixed into cocaine or heroin. The user, expecting to take straight cocaine or heroin, instead consumes a fentanyl-laced drug, Yoder said. With some types of fentanyl, just a dusting the size of a grain of sand can kill a 250-pound man instantly, she said. Prescription rates for opioid pain relievers like fentanyl have fallen, but overdoses associated with fentanyl have risen dramatically, contributing to a sharp spike in synthetic opioid deaths, according to a news release from the coroner's office and Bloomington Police. The McLean County Sheriff's Office and Bloomington Normal and Illinois State University Police Departments also support Safe Passages, a program that encourages addicts to turn themselves and their drugs into law enforcement without facing criminal charges. The next story is entitled District 87 Eyes School Calendar by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. Classes in Bloomington District 87 would start August 20th and high school graduation would be May 30th, 2021, under a tentative 2020 to 2021 school calendar unveiled at Wednesday's school board meeting. Assistant Superintendent Herschel Hanna said, "Feedback on the tentative calendar still is being compiled. It's our first draft," he said. Under the tentative calendar, spring break would be March 22nd to 26th, 2021. The board also received an investment report on the district's Medical Benefits Trust, the John Scott Vocational Education Trust, and the District 87 Foundation. Chris Hogg, Portfolio Manager and Vice President, Commerce Trust Company, said the trusts and foundation are performing well. "Inflation is the number one thing we keep an eye on," he told the board, "and that has been staying below 2%. "Growing geopolitical risks in general remain an area of concern," he said, but Hogg noted that there has been some progress on trade policy with China, which helped stabilize the stock market. "A healthy financial and banking system also is a positive factor," he added. Haig is expecting a positive stock market in the year ahead. The Medical Benefits Trust, which is conservatively invested, received an excellent return of 9.5%, said Haig. The Scott Trust and the District 87 Foundation had returns of about 12.25% and 12.5%, respectively, he reported. And the next item is entitled Officer Injured in Robbery Suspect's Arrest by Kelsey Watson-Aaron. Bloomington. A Bloomington police officer was injured early Wednesday during the arrest of an armed robbery suspect. The incident was the second of two involving the same man. About 8:10 p.m. Tuesday, Bloomington officers were called to Best Western, 604 and a half IAA Drive, where an employee said an armed man demanded money and left with an undisclosed amount of cash. No one was injured during that incident, and officers couldn't find the suspect, according to a news release from the Bloomington Police Department. At 1:50 a.m. Wednesday, officers responded to a disorderly conduct call in the 2000 block of Rainbow Avenue. An armed man was taken into custody after he resisted arrest, and was tased in the process. An officer suffered a minor hand injury during the arrest. After further investigation, the man was connected to the earlier robbery. He faces preliminary charges of armed robbery and resisting an officer, resulting in officer injury. He is held at the McLean County Jail. No bond information was available Wednesday. The Pentagraph does not name suspects until they are formally charged. Anyone with information regarding either incident is asked to contact Detective Tyrell Klein at 309-434-2366 or tklein@cityblm.org. To remain anonymous, call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. Returning now to the front page, here is a big State of Illinois story headlined, Email Sparks Call for Probe. Rape, Corruption Cover-Up Alleged. By Jamie Monks, Chicago Tribune. Springfield. A chorus of lawmakers is calling for a criminal investigation into a possible cover-up of rape and ghost payrolling that was hinted at in an email from a powerful lobbyist and confidant of House Speaker Michael Madigan. In a July 2012 email to aides to then-Governor Pat Quinn, lobbyist Mike McLean advocated for state worker Forrest Ashby in a disciplinary matter, saying he kept his mouth shut about Jones's ghost workers, the rape in Champaign, and other items. He is loyal to the administration. The email did not include any other details about the rape, nor was it clear who McLean was referring to in connection to the ghost workers. Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Chicago Democrat, issued a joint statement Wednesday with Elena Hampton and Sherry Garrett, who have both made allegations of sexual harassment within state government and politics, urging an immediate investigation. They called on Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz and the U.S. Attorney's Office to open an investigation and seek testimony from McLean and relevant members of the former Quinn administration. The only way to end the rape culture that has fully infected our politics in Illinois is to take bold, unequivocal action to root it out right now, the statement said in part. Madigan called the allegations extremely serious and troubling in a statement issued Wednesday afternoon. I had no knowledge of the incident referenced in the story and only learned of this today, Madigan said. I encourage those with any information to come forward. In a follow-up email to Quinn staffers on August 1, 2012, McLean noted that Ashby's disciplinary hearing had been postponed. I do not know what happened, but I know nothing happens accidentally, McLean wrote. McLean's emails were first reported by Chicago radio station WBEZ. Neither McLean nor Ashby could be reached Wednesday for comment. This isn't the first disgusting, dangerous, and brazen display of misogyny we've seen from Mr. McLean, but that doesn't make it any less outrageous, said the statement from Cassidy, Hampton, and Garrett. If the reports are even partially true, this represents a conspiracy to conceal a criminal sexual assault at the highest levels of state government. The WBEZ story sparked a flurry of statements and social media posts from lawmakers in both parties condemning the McLean emails and calling for immediate action. I am stunned and disturbed that keeping quiet about a rape was so casually offered up as proof of loyalty. This needs to be investigated thoroughly, and anyone who helped cover it up needs to face the consequences, said State Senator Sue Raisin, a Republican of Morris. The Illinois Senate Women's Caucus, among others, called for a criminal investigation. That email is horrifying. If anyone has any information about this crime, please contact authorities, said Senator Linda Holmes, an Aurora Democrat and co-chair of the caucus. Sexual assault will not be tolerated. We need to get to the bottom of this and hold people accountable. McLean, a former ComEd lobbyist, has been under federal scrutiny for months as part of a far-reaching probe that includes the powerful utilities' lobbying practices in Springfield. The Tribune reported in December that FBI agents and prosecutors have been asking about connections between ComEd lobbyists and Madigan, notably McLean. The probe has rocked Chicago City Hall, the Illinois State Capitol, and several South Suburban municipalities. Madigan, the leader of the Democratic Party of Illinois, was named among many others in a subpoena and search warrant executed by the FBI in May at the City Club of Chicago, seeking recommendations from the organization's then-president, Jay Daugherty, who was also then a ComEd lobbyist. Daugherty resigned as the organization's president last month. Pritzker has tried to distance himself from McLean as he's been drawn into the spotlight by the investigation. After the Tribune reported in November that federal authorities had recorded some of McLean's phone conversations, the governor told reporters in Springfield that he doesn't speak with McLean by phone. Pritzker's campaign paid Ashby $47,500 for political consulting from April through November 2018, state campaign finance records show. Campaign spokesman Quentin Folks said Ashby was hired to consult on faith-based outreach at the recommendation of McLean and faith leaders in central and southern Illinois. Mr. Ashby had a resume that the campaign would have hired him without McLean's recommendation, Folks said. Ashby went through the same vetting process as all other campaign staffers and consultants, and no red flags were raised, Folks said. The campaign didn't make any other hires based on recommendations from McLean, to my knowledge, he said. Before his consulting gig with the Pritzker campaign, Ashby worked for the State Departments of Veterans Affairs, Human Services, and Corrections for 30 years, retiring from an $87,528 per year job with the prison system in January 2018. He's receiving a state pension of $5,147.50 per month. State records show Ashby is being paid $40 per hour for consulting work for the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board for corrections, curriculum, and development updates. He's been paid $14,460 since October, plus $133.96 in travel reimbursements. As recently as Monday, Ashby was listed on agency's website as the Basic Correctional Officer Project Coordinator. His name and state email address were removed by Tuesday afternoon. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for January 9th. Please stay tuned.